Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are in the last days. No, not those last days. I'm talking about the last days of the 2020 election season. We already know this has been one of the most unusual presidential elections in modern history, but what is most unusual is the rhetoric, the insults, the coarse language, the name calling. Well, if it bothers you, imagine what your children are thinking. You may not have to imagine. They've probably been telling you and asking a whole lot of questions. Well, what do you tell them? Well, tonight we'll hear from award-winning educator and historian Gianni Clarkson with his thoughts and advice about how to talk to your children about this wild election. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You are invited to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Gianni, thanks for joining the conversation.
Hey, good evening. Good evening. Always good to be here. Always good to hear from you. Hope that you're doing quite well.
I'm doing just fine. I'll be glad when all of the noise is over on Wednesday, although I think that will be the beginning, not the end, but that's another show, and we will certainly be covering that next week. But let's get back to the children. You know, one of the things that has been, since really 2016, very, very stressful, I think, for parents is that they've heard from, the candidates, one in particular, who has been obtuse, who's been verbose, who's been overly expressive in the way that he has spoken about his opponents, among other things. And I, you know, from your perspective, this has got to be a really difficult thing for parents.
It's extremely difficult. So this, when I think about four times in history where children have been directly affected because their life has been interrupted, I think about the 1918 flu pandemic, World War One, World War II, the 9/11 attacks, and here we are in the midst of this pandemic. We have been in quarantine for 228 days. That's more than half a year. And coupled inside of this is this election where we have two candidates and this political ride that's absolutely just insane. I feel like when I'm talking to my son and talking to my students, I'm talking more about a morality play than about politics and policy. And that's the weirdness of it all.
So you're a middle school teacher.
Yeah, I teach middle school and high school.
Middle school and high school, great. So I want to talk about both, but let's start with the youngest students first, and then we'll talk about your son as well. But, you know, just when it comes to your youngest students, and I'm sure, you know, you were in the classroom pre-COVID. Were they asking about some of the rhetoric and the rancor?
Absolutely, because of the person that currently sits at 1600. Mm-hmm. I remember the day after the election, and one of my favorite students, she consistently talked about how she was going to be president one day. And she ran into my classroom in tears.
Mm.
And she said, how could America let this happen? How did they let this happen? Because if she lost, then I don't have a chance.
Wow.
And that broke my heart because I'm a teacher. I'm a hope dealer. You know, I deal hope every day. And I'm trying to navigate my own hope while trying to pour hope into her. And I said, well, now you know how much harder you have to work. So now we fast forward to 2020 and kids ask a lot of questions like, why hasn't anyone stopped him from saying the things that he said? Who thinks that these things that he's saying are okay? I was taught that this is wrong, so how come this keeps happening? So these are the things that I have to battle as a teacher. And like I said earlier, I'm really teaching a morality play. And I'm trying to get students to understand, where do your ethics lie and where do possibly other people's ethics lie from across the country?
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. What do you tell your children about the language and the manners or lack thereof that we have seen during this election season? Give us a call. Let's go to Dan. Dan, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Dan. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
So, like I was telling young lady before I got on.
Well, you're my producer, my intrepid producer, Candace. Yes, go right ahead.
Yes, I was telling her, you know, I'm fortunate that I have grown adult children. And they know, and we've been talking all pretty much up to this last year, the importance of what this election means to all of, I must say, all of humankind, because we've seen, you know, the damage that the current administration, the current president is doing to the environment, to human beings, to the actual environment. And so we just want, you know, I told him, like, look, we can only control what we control. And we did our part, you know, a couple of weeks ago by putting in our mail-in ballots. So all we can do now is wait and pray that night that that we get what God wants us to have, and that I pray that that is a change so we can all have a better existence here in the U.S.
Well, Dan, let me ask you this. Okay, you said you have adult children. Do you have grandchildren?
No, sir.
Waiting on that.
Yes, sir.
Well, tell your children, let's get it cooking.
truth be told on that, I told them not until we're 50. Right now I'm 45, so I can tell you.
Yeah, there's that number again. Dan, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about, what do you tell your children, or your grandchildren, for that matter, about what you're hearing concerning election 2020, the rhetoric. I mean, you know, Gianni, look, I'm not going to put it all on, on President Trump. You know,
sure.
It has become, and this is a small thing, but it's still a thing. Growing up, I'm sure in your family, in my family, we were, telling somebody to shut up was not a good thing, okay?
Right.
And during that very first debate, Vice President Biden told President Trump to, hey, shut up, man. You know, that you may consider that mild, considering what we have heard from the president. But there's been a lot of back and forth. And I'm not even talking about just the presidential candidates. But, there's been a lot of bumping heads, depending on where you live, when you see some of the candidates for Congress, or candidates for the Senate, or even some of the down ballot things. And I think, overarchingly, the ones that we've seen the most of have come from the presidential race. But even after, 2016 and some of the things, that we have heard, during that campaign, do you have a strategy for parents, for example, who may come to you and say, what on earth am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to say, little Johnny, little Susie?
So this is, I said, when we have dinner table conversations or just conversations over the phone and in downtime, I say structure your family beliefs and your family moral compass, right? So this is how you can have a conversation about elections. And, because my son has asked me the difficult question, and I told him, this is how I make political decisions.
How old is your son?
I make political. So my son's 15.
He's 15. Okay, go ahead.
So I make political decisions this way. This is who do I care about? Do I care about myself? Do I care about my family? Do I care about my neighbors? Do I care about who winds up getting the short end of the stick? I tell them that I shape my discussion or my political division on what issues does each person care about the most and why. Like, what is the motivation behind these candidates? What are why are they doing what they're doing? I also tell him that my answer, you know, what does this mean for the environment? What does this possibly mean for schools? What does it mean for future generations? Like, these are things that I've put into my discussions with my son. So he's understanding that I'm making a very, very solid decision about what type of future am I going to leave for him, and also who's going to wind up getting left out if I'm not careful. Mm-hmm. I tell him that, look, you will be judged always by how you treat those that have the least of things. That's how you'll be judged. It'll never come down to the things that you collect, your wealth. And I consistently tell my son, and I love the fact that he's a great student, but I told him, I was like, but if you are a bad person, I have failed you.
Hmm.
That's what it boils down to.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're asking, what are you telling your children about election 2020, the rancor and the rhetoric, the foul language, the lack of manners, the coarse tone, the anger, all of that, because they're the future, and they could be learning from this more than they learn from you unless you tell them the right thing. Calvin, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Calvin. What's on your mind?
I hope all is well this evening.
Absolutely. Glad you called.
I just wanted to say that I think it's very important. The teacher hit it right on the bat, but I think it's very important because with my nieces and my nephews, who I'm very close to, I think what we can tell them is the truth. We cannot sugarcoat this, because the reality of it is that they need to see this, because this will only make them stronger. But we all need to work together in order to let them know that they're not alone, because this is a very scary moment, what we're going through right now. So I think the truth is the best thing to tell these children, because they're a lot smarter and they can handle a lot more than we think.
Okay. All right, Calvin, thank you so much. I appreciate that. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. John, calling from Reston, Virginia. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I'm a clinical psychologist working with children and adolescents in the Northern Virginia area.
Okay.
And I just wanted to share, like, so what I'm seeing is excessive anxiety about the election, about the incivility of the candidate, about the state of the country, and just a lot of confusion. Often the children are anxious. The adolescents have very strong opinions about the state of the election, and they're worried about the future. And I'm, like, so impressed by my patients who have very strong opinions and reactions to the way the president's behaving, and just the state of the lies, the deceit, the dishonesty, the uncertainty of the future. And I just hope that things will improve in general. So I just, you know, wanted to share that.
Real quick, Dr. John, so what are the children telling you about what they're hearing, which I'm sure is, you know, the exact opposite of what they've been taught by their parents? And how do they feel about the language and the tone?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I mean, what the general reaction is, there's a lot of anger, and they're not necessarily having the dialogues with their parents.
Oh.
They tend to internalize a lot of that anger and frustration. They're very isolated because of, you know, the COVID pandemic. They're not seeing their peers. They're not seeing their parents are working from home, but the parents are kind of, you know, involved with their lives. So they're kind of angry. They're confused, very disappointed, and uncertain about the future. But I think the most important thing to recognize is that young people today, you know, they are very invested in their futures, and they have a strong voice that, you know, about these issues, and they really care about a lot of things that, you know, and they're recognizing the dishonesty. They're concerned about the environment, the state of healthcare, you know, the economy, the future, you know, because a lot of them are struggling.
Yeah. Well, Dr. John, thank you so much. Continue excuse me, continue to do the work that you're doing to make sure that mental health stays at the top of the list, not just for the children, but for their parents. I appreciate your phone call and your listening. Need to take a quick break. Dwayne calling from D.C. We're going to talk to you next. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. What are you telling your children about election 2020, what they're hearing, the bad manners, the bad language, and what are they telling you? Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. Coming up next on WHUR, John Mons and the original Quiet Storm. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. 202-319-7810. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking to award-winning educator and historian Gianni Clarkson. We're asking him about his thoughts and for some advice about how to talk to your children about this really wild election. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go to Dwayne, you know, Gianni, Dr. John made some really interesting points, and something that I didn't think about. We assume that since everybody's talking about the election, that the children are talking about the election with their parents also. But he said, at least in several cases, children are internalizing that. And I'm sure that can be damaging.
No, it definitely can, because all that does is start a feeding ground for different types of trauma. So, like, there was a study that was done by the University of Kentucky here recently where it said that 58% of children between the ages of basically 12 to 18 care deeply about the election, and they talk amongst themselves, but very rarely do talk to adults about it. So the thing is that when I think about how I talk to my students, I want them to be well-versed in all topics. They don't have to necessarily share my political views, but I want them to be equipped. I tell them, I don't care. I have to understand that you're going to have an opinion, but I want your opinion to be fact-based. So one major website that we use is called AllSides, allsides.com. And it takes one topic, and you can read a topic, and it tells you what a paper article that leans left goes to, what an article that leans right, and an article that plays it right down the center, and how do they feel about it. And I say that now that you've read all these stories, tell me what's your point of view about this topic. How do you feel about COVID-19? How do you feel about how the current president has handled it? Do you have an issue with Biden and the crime bill? Now that you have all this information and have seen it from all sides, now you can have a solid opinion. So if someone says something opposite of what you believe, or you think someone has kind of fake news or false information, you can combat it immediately with truth. And that's how you make strong political kids and strong ethical kids as well.
And political pundits in training, no doubt.
which I say, sadly, what a big problem is that civics has disappeared from the landscape of education. It's not really focused on enough. And I think because it's not focused on enough, the byproduct of it is that sometimes kids become real just not interested in what we're doing or what's happening along with in the world. So what I'm hoping is that inside of my class, and a lot of other great educators as well, are taking the time to teach them all these really great websites or resources to use that help build their capacity to understand national and global issues.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Connie calling from Maryland. Hey, Connie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing just fine.
Good. I'm just calling. I'm going to keep it brief, but I think that we need to bring some attention, and we need, as adults, if we're going to lead our children in a positive way, we need to ask for these rappers to tone it down a whole lot. Now, down a
here's
whole
a question,
lot of
tone it
I
down
tell you
in
why. They're
what
dehumanizing
way?
Their own race of people was using an N-word, and they've been doing this for over 40 years. And I think that, you know, it's time that we address this issue and start awarding them, because I'm going to tell you, rap music is not really music. It's a bunch of it's negative, and it's dehumanizing.
I would disagree. Let me say this. I would disagree with that. I am not a fan of all of it, but I will honestly say that you know growing up in the golden age of go-go and rap music, okay, mm-hmm. there was some good stuff, there was some bad stuff, there still is some good stuff, and there is still some bad stuff, and there are some people. Let me just throw out a name, Queen Latifah, for example, just one person, just one name, who came up during the golden age of conscious rap music. She is iconic. And she has a very positive message. I understand what you're saying, and I think that is applicable, to many of rappers and hip hop. But I would disagree that it is for all of them, Connie.
Well, I'm not gonna be. Pardon me for interrupting you, but
no, go ahead.
I just think that I'm not gonna just. Maybe I should have said not all rap. I'm gonna, you know, because I grew up during that generation too, '90s rap and. You know, but I'm saying what's going on right now, this is a whole different, and it's all started even with the NWA and all that other mess. It was a woman named Z. Dolores Tucker, and I'm originally from Philly. So what I'm trying to say is that she tried to eradicate the different types of rap, and they tried to kill the poor woman. They had death threats and everything. She passed away years ago, but all I'm trying to say is that, you know, the tone can be deadly. And what I'm saying is a lot of children, they don't pick up a book, but they'll listen to rap music. And it feeds their mind. And you can be brainwashed. I mean, we're older now. We don't have to listen to it. But younger people are listening to it. And every word is the N-word, the B-word, and this and the other. And I just think that as adults, we need to send them a message to say, you don't give awards, the BET awards and all this. You don't congratulate people who are sending these negative messages to our children. What needs to happen to me personally is that they need to promote more music education in our schools so our children can learn and love to play real music and instruments.
You know, if I may.
Personally, anybody can be a rapper.
Connie, and I don't want to get too far afield. Because this isn't a question about rap music. We're talking about politics here tonight. And we're talking about the kind of rhetoric and, as I said, the rancor that we are hearing during this political contest. Although, you know, when you talk about the language and you started talking about, you know, some of the words that were used, you know, I just thought in my mind, is she talking about rap music or is she talking about the political debate, Gianni? Because, you know,
it could
be the same thing.
Exactly. Go EI or, but, you know, to kind of boomerang this back a little bit is that in my household, I, of course, Tribe Called Quest, KRS-One,
right.
And now Modern Era, Kendrick Lamar, J. Cole, Rhapsody, who doesn't get enough love. Rhapsody is amazing. But here's the thing, right? I wasn't raised by social media or the media around me. I was raised by George and Glendale Clarkson. Those are my parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what my concern is about with some adults is that we got to stop all this diet parenting where stop asking someone else to raise your child, especially in this political era. You know, we know that here recently that there have been artists who have promoted a certain candidate. And, of course, my scholars have come back and said, well, Mr. Clarkson, how do you feel about that? I said, well, here's the thing. I don't have their money. And people vote their interest. Their interest isn't my interest. But here's the thing. One day when I hopefully God says so I do have their money, I'm not going to trade in green for my black. That's not up for negotiation. And I'm just going to leave it right there.
Okay.
I'm just not going to trade my black for green. I'm just not going to, right? So, needs to say, this is where, as a parent and as a community, you have to stand tall and talk about what are your ethics inside of your household. How do you want to view and take care of people? What is the legacy that you want to leave behind? And stop following behind people who don't know you by name and don't have a plate at your family reunion or at your Thanksgiving dinner. And, you know, I'm sorry. O'Shea does not have a plate at our family reunion. There's no gift underneath the tree for O'Shea or Curtis. There's not. And that's okay. But I want parents and I want adults to understand this, is that that's where you have to stand tall and say, these are our ethics in our household.
Yeah.
And even one day if we get this money, we're not trading our black for green.
Well, there it is.
You know, yeah.
I appreciate that. Connie, thank you so much for your phone call.
Go ahead.
The thing that, to this point, because it's not just about the debates, and it isn't about just the candidates, but it is about the bubbling up of other voices as a result of the candidates and of the debates and of the kinds of things that we are hearing. It is the discourse that high school students, the younger ones, the middle school students may not get this, but the high school students that are now paying attention to not only the foundational civics, but the people who are products of the civics, the senators, the Congress, the members of Congress, and the people who are talking about these things are allowing unsettling things to happen. Let us talk about honesty.
Mm-hmm.
While it can be said that, politicians are known for having a really strange relationship with the truth. But I think, when the Washington Post, for example, says that President Trump has uttered more than 20,000 examples of twisting the truth or outright lying, when a high school student hears something like that and they are going through their own moral evolution,
mm-hmm.
and it's a hard thing to teach, I'm quite sure. Because he is the president. He won the last time, and we don't know whether or not he's going to win the next time. If he, if he wins, what does that say about our society, and what is that lesson? What's the lesson for young people?
Oof.
Yeah.
And to quote 1970 album, Stevie Wonder, one of my favorite tracks off of Signed, Sealed, Delivered, Heaven Help Us All. oh, man, Heaven Help Us All. I was fearful of that Wednesday morning in 2016 because I knew to a certain extent how my scholars were going to respond to it. If I wake up to another Wednesday, and like I said, I honestly do not think we'll get a solid answer to who is our next president on Wednesday anyway. I just don't think that's going to happen.
At least not the first Wednesday. Maybe the second or third.
I think because of the ballots and everything else, and that's a whole nother show. But I think what it is that the adults in the room have to stand tall and say, this is one office. We know that we need to sweep in front of our own porch. We need to make sure that our communities are together. How are we pushing and challenging D.C. City Council members? How are we challenging people that's inside of Prince George's County? How are we challenging those officers, those people that ran for office in our neck of the woods? What are we doing to make sure that we are in a safe environment? He's one person. And I kind of what I tell my students all the time is that, look here, the president is a centerpiece, but he's only as strong as the role players around him. How are we pushing our role players to be better, to make the America that we want to see? you know, I feel that when I've done political studies with students and compared to the energy that President Barack Obama had his first term when running compared to the second time around, that I said that, you know, we let our foot off the gas. We didn't give him the teammates that he needed. And I'm saying that, yeah, we may lose the centerpiece, but we need to make sure that we surround him with so many great pieces. He can't get away with so much foolishness if he is reelected.
Do you, when you have these conversations with your, you know, students, or even, you know, their parents, what do you believe is the biggest mistake that parents can make when discussing the election process, particularly this election process?
The biggest mistake that I've seen consistently is telling children, it doesn't matter. Mm. It doesn't matter. It's a fix. Or it's not important. I think about 1965, Selma, Alabama, Bloody Sunday. I think about the sacrifices that the late, great John Lewis made, how the civil rights movement is built on the backs of black women, of a Fannie Lou Hamer, of a Diane Nash, of the, you know, how we sacrificed our great, a king, we sacrificed Malcolm Little, El Hajj Malik, Malcolm X. We sacrificed so much to have this voice. And for you all of a sudden to say, well, it doesn't matter. What you're doing is you're kind of spitting in the face of those whose faith got spat on to have this right to vote. So you've got to make sure that you don't have those type of conversations with our scholars, that you're doing the things that say, hey, man, we're going to go vote. You know, and voting is important. I took my son to the polls when I voted. And he was like, oh, man, this is a big deal. And I was like, yeah, it's a big deal. And what you're doing is you're creating a legacy and a culture of voting. You know, here recently, nothing made me happier than seeing one of my former students who turned 18 this year, and she sent me her picture of her voting sticker and her at the polls. And I was like, this is the final test, and you pass.
So,
and that made me happy.
So you said your son is 15. You took him this year. When was the first time you took him? And what is the earliest that you believe a parent should take a child to the polls?
So I did not take him this year because I did a drop-off ballot this year.
Okay.
I was, you know, I asked all the questions in the world, but back when, during Obama's first election, that's when I first took him to vote. But what I want to say is that I believe that as soon as a child hits probably in that first grade area, yeah, teach them to vote. Because what you're doing is you're telling them that their voice is important. People, you know, young people don't need to understand that when you raise your vote, you raise your voice, and infuse them with some really great books to help them understand the political process. Dr. Seuss has two really great books, which is If I Was Your President, and of course, If I Had Your Vote. There's an African-American woman by the name of Kelly DePucci, who has a book called Grace for President, and she runs for class president, and it talks about how the turn their classroom into an electoral college. These are things that kids need because it's, instead of it being this big secret that the adults do, it's now you're now allowed into, to quote Hamilton, the room where it happens, to understand what's all going on. So when you finally do get your turn, you're excited about it because you've been doing it for so long, and it works as a rite of passage.
Mm-hmm. What's the earliest that you remember going into the polls with your parents? How old were you?
Wow. I had to be very young because I remember where I grew up in Detroit walking with my parents from Manor to Tyerman. And there was a church that was there. It was Passis Bank that was there. And I remember standing in line with my parents and then being very adamant about waiting their turn for this to happen. And then, of course, walking back And then, of course, that night, watching them watch the election and results come in and, you know, having conversations. And now, mind you, I couldn't understand everything that was going on, but I knew that walk from Manor to our house in Manor to the corner of Tyreman in Detroit was really important, because they saw it was something that they were like, this is something we have to do. So to me, that's when I knew that voting was important.
You know, I remember something similar. Third grade. I was in third grade, and I went, and my listeners who are from the area, they're going to laugh at me, but it was third grade, and my parents voted in the school that I was attending, James McHenry Elementary School in Lanham. That's the polling place. It was in what they called the multipurpose room at the time, and there were these huge Frankenstein machine-like booths, you know, with
right.
you know, with the curtains. And I remember that I was in the booth with my mother, and I was, you know, I was a little kid. I was short, you know, and she was, you know, clicking, you know, they move the thing and the curtains close, and I'm, you know, standing there, and I don't remember any conversation. There probably was one, knowing my mother, but I just don't, the thing is, we were in there a while. I was like, what on yeah. earth is going on? And you know, I just remember thinking kind of the same thing, that this was as important as going to the grocery store or going to church.
Mm-hmm.
It was something.
There was a plan.
Yeah, it was something. You didn't go every Sunday, and you didn't go every week or every other week like you went to the grocery store. But every now and then, as a child, you knew that this was something that you had to do. And the only other thing, and this goes back to the tone and the tenor, I remember also that. Around 1973, I was really, really young then, but I remember the Watergate hearings because they got in the way of my afternoon cartoons. And I remember some of the things, you know, that Richard Nixon was saying. But even back then, and comparing, you know, even the Watergate hearings were still civil. Okay?
Right.
And if you look at the old video of, you know, the debates, you know, of, you know, in the days of yore, that stuff was civil. We're not getting anything like that. And, you know, do you worry that things are not going to ever go back to a sense of civility and the impact that it could have on our future voters?
I absolutely do, because we've seen someone in the highest office in the land not have the best moral compass. And before he had the highest office in the land, he did things that showed us what type of moral compass he did have, and he still won. And that to me is what's scary. I think that the one of the major pushes of this new administration, if it is elected, is that they're going to have to return everything back to a sense of normalcy. Like, this is not how we get down. This is not what we do. Because kids are watching, and they're watching very, very carefully. You know, our political landscape should not mirror the antics of their favorite reality show with a bunch of basketball wives. Those things should not be congruent. They shouldn't be parallel, right? And because they're getting so parallel, that's why I feel like kids and even adults have lost reverence in our political platforms. You know, we can agree to disagree, but we cannot be disagreeable. And not be disagreeable to the fact that we become insulting, we're attacking each other's families, things like that. And I think that's going to be the major push of the administration. How does that happen? What do they do?
Let me go back to the phone lines. Anarda calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. The reason I'm calling is concerning to rhetoric and reckless comment.
Sure.
By the U.S. president. And again, last week, he declared war in Ethiopia. He simply declared war. Egypt can blow up the dam. That's what he said, exactly word by word. And at the 7 years old, immediately after she listened to this one, she got respond to the president. You know, children are listening what he say every day with reckless remark every single day. So this is what I'm going to say. And everything is on video, whatever he said, whatever the kid says, talking about, everything is on, you know, recorded.
Do you have children, Anarda?
Yeah, I have children, yes.
How old are they?
My daughter is 7 years old, and the older one is 22.
So what are you telling the seven-year-old about what's going on?
Yeah, I'm always telling her that she's listening to the news and everything. This is craziness, really craziness. We don't want any kind of remark with the free world. No leader in the world, the free world, can say this is absolutely crazy. That's what I'm going to say. I'll tell her that one. She knows. And then if you talk to her, she'll tell you everything. You know, the children are listening. This is what I'm going to say. And then, you know, kids are listening. Everything. That's what I'm going to say.
Well, Anarda, thank you so much. Keep being a great parent, and I hope that you have voted. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sure thing. Gianni, here's something else. It just occurred to me. You know, this really worries me. Two issues in either order, issues about race that have come up and issues about women that have come up. Insensitive or racist comments about race and women, and the message out there that it's just okay. Talking about turning back the clock, it just really bothers me. And I'm talking about beyond the obvious stuff of grabbing women by their private parts. That's obvious, but when you're hearing things about, you know, just this week about, you know, the president wanting to put women's husbands back to work. Well, you know, how about putting the whole family back to work? You know, because women are working too. More women in the workforce than men right now. The whole bit, briefly wrap this whole piece up when you're talking about some of these really, really dark things. That's the only way I can put it, just dark things that we're hearing.
Yeah, it's a nuclear ideology that don't worry, women, I'm going to make sure that I get the men back to work. It's clouded in so much sexism. You know, it's a very sexist statement to imply that, you know, that there are not women that are out here making it and doing an amazing job. You know, that's very condescending. And once again, it shows his view of what he thinks of women. That's bothersome, highly bothersome. But also it goes back to what is taught in that household about morals. Now, mind you, there are people who are blind followers of his that deem that type of language okay. I don't deem that type of language okay. And those are conversations that I have to have inside of my classroom, telling students, look, you don't. That's not the language of a aggressive, forward thinking people to think that way. His consistent tone deafness of racial issues is astounding. It's literally astounding. But however, it's not surprising. Exhibit A, Central Park 5, and yeah. I'll leave that right there. But when given a chance, in front of, and this is what it's him and
you got you've got 20 seconds to wrap it up because I'm almost out of time.
Okay, it's him and his soundboard that bothers me the most. It's the fact that he found it okay to tell his followers to stand by and stand down, and that's what's really terrible. And when one of the Republican analysts said that it's unfair to ask Trump to denounce white supremacy because that's his base.
Yeah, lots to talk about, lots to think about, and lots to vote about. And in this area, you still have time. Election Day, November 3rd, early voting in the DMV still available. Virginia, it ends tomorrow. DC and Maryland, early voting ends on Monday, and you still have a chance to do it on November 3rd. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, October 30th. Gianni, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Truly humble. Thank you again.
For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Iron Waller, I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night. Have a wonderful and safe holiday weekend.